Wednesday, October 23rd, you've got Auswide right across Australia on ABC Local Radio. Sinead Mangan travelling to Uluru, Central Australia for today's program and tomorrow's, and there's a big show coming up on Friday. Till then, though, it's my job to keep the seat warm. G'day, my name's Meacham Philpott, live from the studios of ABC Tropical North and Mackay North Queensland. Now, if you, at the moment, are tending to your sheep around Walker, maybe you're driving a 200-tonne dump truck and you've just kicked off that night shift, or look, you could be paddling a boat around the Gulf. If you're up for some radio for the next 25 minutes, I guarantee I can keep your interest there. One of the stories is, well, I just call this uplifting.
Pretty close to home and coming around a slight bend in the road. And there were a few successive bumps and each bump was, I guess, bigger than the other, and the front wheel dug into one of those bumps and sent me flying over the handlebars. So I landed awkwardly on my head and neck, and from that moment forward I wasn't able to move any part of my body.
I've got another story, which I guess you'd call a story of hope. So what you're telling me is I don't need to buy one of those really big umbrellas for Christmas lunch this year.
Look, I don't want to make any promises about Christmas lunch because you always get them wrong, because Christmas lunch is a very special time where it just does not listen to any of the weather. Mm. But yeah, we wouldn't be expecting really widespread wet conditions until quite late this year.
How many times have we said, oh, if only we could control the weather? Story out of Victoria. One bloke says he can.
We've basically discovered a way that we can modify the flight corridors that allow the rain systems through.
Welcome to Auswide on ABC Local Radio. Well, let's get into the program for this evening. Almost 10 years ago, after a motorbike accident left him paralysed, a man with quadriplegia has finished a four-day bike ride across South Australia. Charles Bryce has hand-cycled 300 kilometres from the scene of his crash, mapping out the journey he took in 2010 to reach the emergency department in Adelaide. But the journey wasn't just a test of physical or emotional endurance. As Samantha Dawes discovers, Charles endured the onerous adventure to raise vital funds for spinal cord injury research in the hope that the 400 Australians paralysed each year may one day be able to walk again.
It's here, metres from a dirt track, where a motorbike accident changed Charles Bryce's life forever.
Are you lifting or are you pushing that?
What do you want to do? Because it was sort of rocky here and sand there.
His dad Leon and friend Jock are lifting Charles in his wheelchair off the road and into a patch of scrub. It's the first time Leon has stood in this spot.
What's life for you? Being back here.
Well, I wasn't looking forward to it, but better than what I thought. Reopens wounds.
9 years ago, Charles Bryce was working as a farmhand in the Riverland town of Peruna. It was a Saturday morning when he set off on a trail ride before a game of country footy.
We were pretty close to home and coming around a slight bend in the road. And there were a few successive bumps and each bump was, I guess, bigger than the other, and the front wheel dug into one of those bumps and sent me flying over the handlebars. So I landed awkwardly on my head and neck, and from that moment forward I wasn't able to move any part of my body.
The 19-year-old midfielder never ran onto the football oval that day. Instead, he was rushed to Loxton Hospital before being airlifted to the emergency department in Adelaide.
I remember getting told from the doctor that I'd broken the C5 and C6 vertebrae in my neck, and then I'd never walk again. I mean, I remember just bursting into tears and telling him that it was bullshit.
Jock McNeil, a childhood friend who owns this land, was riding with Charles on that fateful day. For months, Jock struggled to drive past this very spot.
It used to make me feel crook, all the memories of the day, and I would be thinking about how he was in hospital and how it could have been me or any of the other guys.
But it was Charles who spent 52 days in the intensive care unit before calling Adelaide's Hampstead Rehabilitation Centre home for 14 months.
How did you feel about yourself in rehab?
I knew that I'd changed quite a bit. It took me quite a while accepting who I now was and what I looked like. So I remember, you know, just trying to avoid any mirror I could. And yeah, really, I was just a mere shell of the person I used to be.
What was your mobility like on first entering the Hampstead Rehab Centre?
I couldn't lift my arms to scratch my nose or to do any of the basic daily activities, brushing your teeth and things like that.
In the very first days of the diagnosis and things like that, we were probably prepared for the worst, that he wasn't going to be able to do anything.
But to the contrary, Charles Bryce is doing something remarkable. After a lengthy rehabilitation process, he's regained some upper body mobility, which he's now using to hand cycle 300 kilometres through South Australia's Riverland to Adelaide.
Pretty keen now.
It's now the next day, and I've returned to the farm with Charles, Leon and Jock. Accompanying us are 21 other cyclists who are friends and family. The group are cycling to raise vital research funds in the hope that one day there'll be a cure for spinal cord injuries. As a group check their chains and click in their cleats, Charles is helped into his hand cycle. Charles pushes forward, onto the road and in front of the pack, leading his team to Loxton, Swan Reach and onto Tanunda in the Barossa Valley. They're due to reach Adelaide in 4 days' time.
How's the ride going, team?
Pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
I catch up with the cyclists on their final leg, 26 kilometres from the city. They've battled through cold mornings, rough headwinds and persistent rain.
Today's been really tough, hot sore throughout the shoulders and feeling it with every rotation of the crank, so...
I don't have long to talk before the group hit the road again, determined to cross the finish line before 3 p.m. It's round 2:34, a crowd has assembled and we're watching Charles lead 21 cyclists into Adelaide's Victoria Park. He's completed this onerous adventure, having raised $100,000 for spinal cord injury research.
Nobody had to come on this journey with me. Yeah, I was so grateful for everyone that did.
A seemingly impossible journey proved entirely possible.
Samantha Dawes with that story about the remarkable Charles Bryce hand cycling 300 kilometres. You've got my admiration.
All around the country, you're on ABC Australia Wide.
I eat corn sometimes and my mum cooks it in the oven.
Well, Charles, how much rain did we have? He said, no, none. I said, you're mad, man.
ABC Australia Wide.
Because I came from Wynyard area where it rains and rains and rains. And when it's not raining, it's raining more.
On ABC Radio.
Now, for 25 years, the town of Renmark in South Australia has been coming up roses, as they say. Its annual Rose Festival showcases the Riverland region along the River Murray as one of Australia's premier rose-growing locations. It started with Renmark's internationally renowned rose grower, the late David Ruston. Now its gardeners defy the dry conditions that can cause hardship for the region to open their gates and share the joys of their gardens. Catherine Husenrader has this story.
Strangers are chatting like old friends at this open garden in Loxton. They are making time to stop and smell the roses at one of the nearly 40 open gardens during the 10-day Renmark Rose Festival. Among them is Queenslander Lynn Chapman.
I am a gardener myself, so I appreciate the work that's gone into it, and it's all beautiful. Yeah, it's lovely.
What do you think of our roses here? How do we grow them?
Oh, I just can't. I've just taken so many photos of roses since I've been in this cooler climate. We do try to grow roses in Queensland, but nowhere near as beautiful as the ones here. Yes.
This 2.5 acre garden belongs to a local couple. They've spent the past 20 years transforming a disused drive-in on the outskirts of town into a garden oasis. Owner Chris Schultz has been kept busy mingling with visitors.
We've had a lot of people, I suppose, from every state, basically, and, yeah, they can't believe you park out in the car park and it's so dry and barren, and then you walk into this area and... yeah, it's pretty lush, I suppose, and shady and cool. So, yeah, most people have good comments to say.
It's kind of the story of the Riverland, isn't it, that it is so dry and barren, but then as soon as you put some water into the ground, we grow things really well.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's just a matter of finding the right plants that suit the area. I mean, there's a few things here we've been a little bit adventurous with, but, yeah, most things are surviving, so...
Talk me through some of the features of the garden.
Well, the main feature, I suppose, is the large pond area in the centre of the garden. We have another, a large wisteria, cool shady area. It leads to a sunken down iris garden. We do have a lot of rocks as the feature, all different sizes. We've probably got in excess of 500 tonne of rock in the garden, we think. If you walk around the path, it leads around to a little stone cottage that we built 3 years ago. Some of the stonework in that, it dates back to the 1850s, so we've built it out of recycled products, and then that sort of leads from that point around to a fairly formal sort of rose garden, which I think we've got 110 roses in that part. So but yeah, there's just a lot of colour and a little bit of a mixture of everything, really.
Something like this, having the Rose Festival as an event and having people open their gardens, what does that do for the Riverland?
Yeah, we get a lot of people come to the area just purely to, well, we had people yesterday from Adelaide that drove up just to look at this and then went home again. So, and you get them from everywhere, and you know, it's just a good thing for the whole area, really. So
I'm Rosalie from Adelaide. I've loved it. The ambiance is just wonderful. The people are so outgoing and friendly and gentle and country. I'm a country girl too. And I get the sense of giving out, and it's beautiful.
What are some of the things that you've taken away? Are you a gardener at home? Can you incorporate any ideas?
Mine's a bit of a jungle, but it's my joy of my life. I wouldn't want to be without my garden. And it's the way the light reflects and the beauty of the colours and how you can feel the seasons change and all of that. It's part of what keeps me going.
Catherine Herzenroder reporting from Renmark's Rose Festival, of course, in South Australia's Riverland.
In a moment of weakness, I said, yeah, sure, let's do 70.
ABC Australia Wide.
Well, still to come, this remarkable story about a man that claims he can change the weather.
Electromagnetic scalar waves don't exist. There's no such thing.
Associate Professor of Physics Martin Sevier reviewed Mr. Miles' website.
He's taken a few words and put them together and made them sound somewhat scientific, but it's meaningless. You can say the words, but they mean nothing.
That story, about 5 minutes away on Auswide, right across Australia on ABC local radio. But let's go to this story. If you live in northern Australia, well, the year, it's not so much summer, autumn, winter, spring. It's more dry season, wet season. Now, wet season, of course, is dictated by the monsoon. And for those of us looking to the sky longingly for rain, ABC Weather's Kate Doyle has just published an article online on this year's monsoon activity in India. Apparently, it's running rather late. But the question is, Kate Doyle, just how late is it running?
So that's a whole month later than usual and a whole week later than the previous record. So we're talking a significantly late monsoon, which is, of course, interesting because we're all connected eventually.
Now, the monsoon, of course, India, northern hemisphere, then it will travel southerly and we come into the southern hemisphere sides of things. But there's something I've heard referred to numerous times called an IOD. Can you explain that for us, please?
Yeah, so the IOD is the Indian Ocean Dipole. So what's going on at the moment and the reason why we're expecting that transition of the monsoon to stay up north and then come down really quite slowly and quite late is because we're experiencing a really strong positive IOD. It has the potential to be the strongest on record. So a positive IOD is an atmospheric circulation which happens over the Indian Ocean, a lot like the El Nino across the Pacific Ocean. So what we're talking about is we've got warm air rising over in the west, so near India and Africa, and then moving up across the atmosphere and then descending upon us here in Australia. So when that air descends, it discourages rains. That's been associated with lots of the drought conditions we've experienced over this year and last year. But it means that we've got wet conditions over in Africa and in India, which has encouraged that monsoon to stay up over India over the last month or so.
Now, you mentioned a positive IOD. Historically, good thing, bad thing for us?
If you want rain, it's not great for you, basically. So historically, it's associated with dry conditions in Australia, in the east of Australia in particular. And it's also associated with lower cyclone levels, though, early in the season. As everything in nature tends to have positives and negatives, But yeah, we generally associate a positive IOD with dry conditions in Australia. So
can an IOD change though?
Yeah, so different years are different strengths. So sometimes that circulation goes the other way. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation with, does the ocean trigger the atmosphere or does the atmosphere trigger the ocean? Mm-hmm. But generally, if we've got warmer waters over here near Australia, we can get that warm rising air closer to Australia, and then we've got a negative IOD. So we've got air rising over Australia, which creates wet conditions. So we've got warm, moist air rising, which condenses, creates rain and storms, mm-hmm. And then they get drier conditions over in India and Africa. So it can go both ways, but at the moment we're experiencing a positive IOD, which means we've got descending air upon Australia in dry conditions.
Okay, and would that mean that our water temperatures are a bit down at the moment where traditionally they'd be?
Yeah, so the ocean temperatures up over the northwest of Australia have been quite low. That's also discouraged rainfall because you want those nice warm oceans that really want to get excited and create some rain by evaporating and mm-hmm. mixing things up. But if they're just kind of cool, they're happy to sort of just literally chill.
Righto. Okay, now, last year's wet season, was that a positive IOD?
Yeah, last year there was a positive IOD, but the real key for last year's wet season was even after that IOD broke down. So the IOD breaks down traditionally when the monsoon comes down. Mm-hmm. So when the monsoon comes down, it brings, with the tilt of the earth, we get that focus of energy further south on Australia in the summertime, which is why we get summer. It's hotter, so the earth's tilted more towards the sun. Well, the southern hemisphere's tilted more towards the sun. So we end up with those warmer waters coming down. So even if it's started off cold, it gets warmed up because of the sun eventually. That's going to happen no matter what. And that tends to break down the IOD, as well as bringing winds that counter the IOD winds. So we have warmer temperatures and the winds mixing things up. So the IOD usually breaks down when the monsoon comes down. So really what you're looking for how the monsoon season's going to end up is how those other factors are going to play in. So last year was especially dry, and last year we had near El Nino conditions for the Pacific Ocean. Mm. So the Pacific Ocean was still quite warm even after the Indian Ocean went to a sort of normal level. This year it's not looking like we're going to have near El Nino conditions for the Pacific Ocean. That's not on the forecast at the moment. So the silver lining to all this, I guess, is when that monsoon does eventually come down, and we would expect it to be late, resulting on the fact that it's come down quite late from India. But when it does eventually come, we've got no reason to think that it's going to be particularly dry. So we're looking at relatively normal conditions, and relatively normal conditions are usually a lot wetter for the north of Australia.
Okay, so what you're telling me is I don't need to buy one of those really big umbrellas for Christmas lunch this year.
Look, I don't want to make any promises about Christmas lunch because you always get them wrong, because Christmas lunch is a very special time where it just does not listen to any of the weather. Mm. But yeah, we wouldn't be expecting really widespread wet conditions until quite late this year. Having said that, that's when we usually get the bigger systems come through.
And please just confirm for me as well, Bureau has come out and they've said the cyclone rollout this year, they're expecting it to be less than normal, less than average, correct?
Yes, a slow start to the cyclone season as well as a slow start to the monsoon season.
Kate Doyle from ABC Weather there, and to all of you that are really looking for rain at the moment, my heart goes out to each and every one of you.
ABC Australia Wide.
Country people can't be discriminated against, not in Tumut.
They were homesick, you know, poor little lumps.
A flood is a flood and a fire is a fire and a drought is a drought.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
Well, let's go to this incredible story. A company that claims it can control the weather is gaining momentum in the Victorian grain belt, where a group of farmers have paid for rain throughout the growing season. David Miles has been marketing rain to farmers for more than a decade and says he's making millions of dollars from farmers and investors. Scientists and government departments have branded Mr. Miles a hoax, but the competition watchdog says his company is very difficult to regulate. Danny Grindley reports.
David Miles not only claims he can make it rain, he says he can also stop the rain. But not just for anyone.
We've had phone calls. Can you make sure we have a sunny day for our wedding? You know, and so we don't do public events. We've done a few favours for a couple of people, but that's it.
His company targets farmers. In 2006, it was called Acquiesce and was labelled a cruel hoax by the Victorian Department of Primary Industries. It's since rebranded to become Miles Research and is promoting three-month rain contracts to farming regions for $250,000.
A good John Deere tractor's worth $500,000 for 6 months' rain. It's worth a John Deere tractor, isn't it? We're offering rain into any region in Australia that would engage with us on a success basis.
Which means you only pay when it rains.
Well, I got involved because it sounded good, probably, like, you know, the fact that you can control weather, because as a farmer, rainfall is everything.
This client, who asked to remain anonymous, is among a group of Wimmera farmers that signed contracts between May and October.
Well, I think the evidence is out there. You look at the forecast, what's meant to come, and all of a sudden it increases dramatically. You know that he's behind it. And I reckon I haven't seen such good crops in this district ever, everywhere.
Along with farmer clients, Mr. Miles says he secured several million dollars from investors. He will only explain how his company works in vague terms.
We've basically discovered a way that we can modify the flight corridors that allow the rain systems through.
The Miles Research website says this is achieved using electromagnetic scalar waves.
Electromagnetic scalar waves don't exist. There's no such thing.
Associate Professor of Physics Martin Sevier reviewed Mr. Miles' website.
He's taken a few words and put them together and made them sound somewhat scientific, but it's meaningless. You can say the words, but they mean nothing.
Well, I think electromagnetic and scalar waves in the same phrase is nonsensical, but somehow people have put that together.
Fact you is, put it together on your website.
All right. There is information that's a little bit obscure, because that's a way of firewalling the core intellectual property so that it can't be weaponized and used to harm nations.
Secrecy. To ensure someone doesn't use his technology to flood a country or region. It's the same reason given when clients ask to see Mr. Miles' equipment, which none of them have.
We've been advised early on when they said to us not to patent, but rather try and keep it a little bit like Coca-Cola, a secret split up in multiple locations.
One client said he asked to see the outside of one of the shipping containers, of which Mr. Miles says there are many. Mr. Miles said no.
You know, a skeptic would say, well, therefore it doesn't exist. And OK, I think that's a naive approach. We haven't presented the device, but we have the means to present a device. We're trying to say to people, judge us on the result.
Mr. Miles' evidence is rainfall above what was forecast by the Bureau of Meteorology. Associate Professor of Meteorology Todd Lane specialises in thunderstorms and rainfall.
Rain is probably the most difficult thing to forecast. The accuracy of these forecasts, while they do add value, there's so much uncertainty associated with these seasonal predictions. It's not particularly surprising if we get really wet conditions based on a dry forecast, or drier conditions based on a dry forecast.
So when rain comes, Miles Research customers pay. When it doesn't, Mr. Miles has an explanation.
I mean, the classical one was a week or so ago. He went to bed at half past one thinking the job's under control, and by 3 o'clock it had changed.
So what did that mean?
Well, that means the event that was coming, they got it in South Australia, but we didn't get it here.
In terms of regulation, it's very difficult to prove Mr. Miles isn't causing rainfall. Mick Keogh is Deputy Chair of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission.
You know, you can put psychics, water diviners, astrologers, all sorts of questionable services into the same category. If you wanted to prosecute, a court requires you to prove, you know, essentially that there's no basis for the claims being made. And that is a very difficult thing to do.
You are a farmer. Can you see why farmers would be attracted to it?
Certainly having experienced the millennium drought, you get to a point sometimes of wondering whether it ever will rain again. So I guess you would get to a level of desperation about things that might work. But in cold, hard, practical terms, it's preying on people's desperation, it seems to me, as an individual, to be engaging in this sort of promises. But it's up to individuals, obviously, to make their own mind up. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
ACCC Deputy Chair Mick Keogh ending that remarkable story from Danny Grindlay. And that's a wrap with the best stories across Australia this evening. My name's Meacham Philpott. Thanks for having a listen. I'll catch you tomorrow.
ABC Radio.
There's lots of possibility.
There's a lot of amazing people here.
I love being here because I learn something new every single day.
Great place to live. Wouldn't live anywhere else.
It's just lovely.
You almost get a bit teary, to be honest.
This is ABC Radio.
And just a reminder, Sinead Magan back with the program on Friday. I'll catch you again tomorrow. Hooray.